If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S. Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, I don't know if you can hear this, but I'm kind of glowing right now.
Oh, really? Are you pregnant?
You might say I'm a little tumescent, even.
Oh, gross.
You know that moment when you've got a new relationship and everything is great, and like you don't see the faults in the other person at all?
It's You're just excited about that person.
You just want to be with them all the time.
Are you starting a new podcast with a different partner?
Ben, I found my new regular bar, and after last night, I'm proud to say that we're going steady.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just what you need.
It brought a friend in there because you want to pass the friendship test. Second time for the friend. Friend also had a great time. Felt very clear by the end of the evening that things were going to move forward into a more serious form of the relationship.
Wow.
And here we are. I'm getting service industry discounts.
Whoa.
I'm getting welcome wagon status to a nice seat at the bar. It's really nice.
Damn.
It's good.
That's yeah. That's the type of shit that really appeals to me. Special treatment. Love it.
This will date the episode. Went in there on Easter night, the night of Easter.
The drunkest night of the year.
There were zero people in there, Ben.
Wow.
It was me and my good buddy.
That's a great opportunity to like get a bartender on your side. So, you know, make a bond with the bartender that's going to last beyond that hang.
I think that's why I'm able to tell you about my change in relationship. It's because we had a bunch of quality time for a number of hours.
Yeah.
And it was super fun. Fun was had by all. Ben, I really want you to meet this bar.
Oh.
Maybe most of all. It's not going to mean as much if it doesn't pass your test.
I mean, you've built it up quite a bit. I feel like you've maybe given me more power than I should have.
It would be heartbreaking if you went in there and it didn't go great.
If I didn't give it a full-throated positive review.
I know. I mean, it could happen. It's like anything else, though. I mean, things could change the relationship in such a way that it doesn't go on. Like, I had a regular bar that you were familiar with over the years. That situation ended up changing, and
yeah.
We no longer go there anymore. And
this is because the bartender you liked moved on to other things,
yeah.
and it caused you not to like the restaurant and bar anymore.
This bartender made a career decision without thinking of my feelings at all.
How dare she?
So, yeah, that ended up ending a great bar and patron relationship, but now things are looking good.
Well, Adam, I'm glad that the future is so bright for you.
I'm not trying to rub it in your face. That can be annoying too. You got a friend who's into a new thing,
yeah,
and you can't help but be irritated by their happiness. I don't want to irritate you with my happiness, Ben.
I don't want to be a jealous man, but there's a lot about the way you have arranged your life that I am somewhat covetous of. Lots of great friends. You've got, you know, you've been in the same city for a really long time, so your roots are deep, and you establish, you know, ongoing relationships with things and places, and that's just something that is so far outside of my grasp right now.
I hold people to me very tight, people and things. But luckily for you, Ben, you're one of those people and things.
I get to come up there from time to time and draft in your wake and enjoy all of the wonderful things that you have at your fingertips.
God, see, now I feel bad. Now I don't like this. I don't like this at all anymore.
You shouldn't feel bad. It's me that's got the problem.
You know what? If we could pivot into that conversation, that was a thing that I was actually thinking about this morning, not having to do with my new relationship with a bar, but just in the general sense of trying to appreciate the stress that I have in the times that I feel those stresses.
Right.
Like,
you mean because our career is now a very fun thing, and
right.
Occasionally we get a bunch of stuff on our plate that we have to get done in a timely way or bad things will happen, but we'd rather have these problems than almost any other problems.
That is such a hard ball to keep my eye on, because I feel like, why can't I be happy when everything is going pretty well?
That's not how it works.
That is not how it works, man.
No. And it's okay that that's not how it works.
Yeah, I'm just trying to like change my relationship to the stresses of our new careers.
Yeah.
And trying to twist that into a pretzel that is a fun kind of stress.
Yeah.
Like my relationship to the stress needs to change, because the stress isn't going away. You know that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the stress that I've been under lately is I keep feeling like I don't have enough time to get this giant Millennium Falcon Lego set out of the box and start building it.
You know, Child Ben would like to reach through the time butthole and grab you by the lapels.
Yeah. Get it together, man.
Yeah. Is it still in the box?
It's still in the box. I actually just went to the hardware store today and bought a folding table that narrowly fits into a small amount of spare space in my office.
That's great.
It was literally like a problem of the only horizontal surface in the house that could accommodate this thing is the dining room table. And that is not going to fly with the missus if it gets taken over for something like this. So yeah, that problem is now solved.
Wow. Hey, that's great. And that card table is going to come in handy for other things.
Yeah.
Like playing cards.
I'm sure it will.
Like the kids table at a holiday dinner.
Yeah. We've got a Friendly Fire mini tour coming up.
Yeah!
And that has been occupying so much of my time that I haven't, like, I feel like I could have gotten a lot of this done last week, but too busy, like, getting t-shirts and posters put together and booking all of the travel and stuff. And
it was very much a fire ready aim situation when it came time to book this tour.
Yeah. So
that's not how it works.
If you'd like to see us live, I think tickets will still be on sale when this episode comes out. It's friendlyfire.fm/live. We got like 5 shows all over the U.S. Not really all over the U.S., but there's 5 cities.
The places that we could reasonably predict not losing a ton of money putting on shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would say that was part of it. I think that mainly we booked this show to not go to places specifically at certain people.
Right. And those are the people who are sending us tweets about why we're not going to their particular city. Yeah. I hope they marinate in the feeling of being singled out, because that's exactly what we did.
We did it at them.
The
most heartbreaking ones of those are when, like, we tried to make a city happen and just couldn't because the timing was bad.
And they don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way. That's happened a couple of times.
Lucky to get to do this at all. So.
Right. There it is. Back to one.
Do you want to get back to Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, we're in the middle of a story.
We are.
It's the second part of a two-parter.
You don't really remember much of the first part.
That's right, because we were Mornhammered the first time through. So we really need the last time on Deep Space Nine pre-roll here.
Yeah.
As we discuss Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 11, Paradise Lost.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Anybody seen my paradise around here?
It's kind of related to our Marin, right? For everyone on Earth, things are going pretty great.
Yeah.
It's going so great that they give it a name. Like, they actually call it paradise. And that is a thing that I would not have the confidence to do if I lived in paradise. If that tells you anything about my mental makeup.
You don't want word getting out and a bunch of riffraff showing up? Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to give it a name. I don't want to make it real by calling it that.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that is very much related to the stuff we were discussing in our Marin.
Yeah, and they say it all the time. You don't want to ruin paradise. But we never find out why it's paradise, do we? Other than it's the opposite of what we're getting. It's the opposite of more security.
Well, I think it's paradise in that it's, you know, nobody wants for anything on Earth.
I mean, Grandpa Joe wants a job. He wants it so bad.
Yeah, but he can have it.
I don't understand this. We're going to get into it as the episode goes on. I have so many questions about Uncle Joe. It's Grandpa Joe.
Grandpa Joe.
So you thought the deep sea story in the first half having to do with Red Squad was going to go nowhere. It's just Nog's stupid sea story.
Right.
But it actually means something in this ep.
The power outage doesn't add up, and it starts to seem like Red Squad got deployed somewhere right around the time that the power outage started. And Sisko and Odo kind of smell a rat.
That's why I brought it up.
I kind of liked Odo's vibe in this scene because they're meeting in Sisko's office where he functions as head of Starfleet security. Mm-hmm. And Odo kind of walks Sisko through all of the information he would need to find to like do an investigation for his superior officer, but who his superior who is not a natural investigator the way Odo is. I really liked that.
Odo is just fucking built for this. You're right. But he doesn't relish in the chase. Like, sometimes we'll get an episode where Odo's on a case and he's, like, living for it.
Yeah.
He is not that version of him.
No.
In this ep. It's definitely a Ben Sisko-driven story.
Well, and I think Odo wants Ben Sisko to have the, you know, get the collar.
Yeah.
But, and
he wants to put the dope on Ben Sisko's table.
Yeah. It's always a jam up when there's dope on the table.
Uh-huh.
but I liked how he's in the background helping Sisko do this thing that Sisko is not naturally good at. But, you know, like letting him actually get a W with this.
Right.
The B story is Jake and Grandpa Joe booting the restaurant back up. It's been like a few days since the power outage. It seems like Earth is kind of back to having power, but not really back to normal. There are still troops in the streets. The restaurant has not been open. And Jake is even like a little bit questioning whether it's too soon to go back into business.
And Jake's like,
you know, there's hardly anyone on the streets. You're not going to have any customers.
And Grandpa Joe's like,
well, I've got plenty of customers. Just look outside.
Wait until you see the security officers. And that's his plan. He's going to sell to the security. That's who's going to fill his restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the type of fan that, you know, like in the new Star Wars movies, the toxic fan community that came out around those were adjudicating story moments that they felt didn't make sense. And so, like, I got hung up in this scene about Jake and Grandpa Joe going to get groceries for their restaurant, which I want to say right off the top, I don't want to be seen as equivalent to a Star Wars fanboy talking about why Snoke was killed in the second movie. Like, I don't think they're equivalent, but does it make me a bad fan to want some of this stuff answered when we talk about like how a world is built and works?
What does the cash and carry look like for a restaurant operating in a post-scarcity future? Is the question
right.
You want this episode to answer?
What is the downside to an empty restaurant other than nothing to do? Like, does he get anything for quote unquote selling a bunch of food. This is too confusing.
Yeah.
Other than like the self-worth he must feel in looking out onto the floor and seeing a bunch of tables filled, what is he doing this for?
It's just his way, you know?
Yeah.
It's how he derives value from his existence.
Give me Cisco's The Bottle episode. Am I a jerk and a bad science fiction fan, or is that a kind of science fiction that some people enjoy that is being done on other shows or in other books or whatever that really like those kind of deep dives?
I like those deep dives too, and I think that I was talking to a friend of mine about how there's going to be a Star Wars TV show at some point soon, and I feel like that could be catastrophic for Star Wars because it's a very poorly thought out universe with a bunch of major holes in if this is technically feasible, why wouldn't this and this and this be true? You know, like, why are there so many slaves and in a future where,
right,
where like mass automation is clearly possible? And like, why would you have robots that have sentience and feelings be part of the cast of slaves in that society? And also, like, why would the Jedi defend such a society if it's so fucking great?
Great questions. Why are no people fucking these robots?
Like, I mean, think they're just there. The stresses a television show puts on a built world like that are so much greater than, you know, a handful of 2-hour films. And I wonder if that, like, prestige television show is going to have a really hard time making it seem realistic that this universe even exists, you know?
Star Trek Discovery went through a bunch of blowback, too, week to week.
Right.
When it was coming to series. And, yeah, like it's going to be so much worse with a Star Wars show.
It's like, Brandon Bird is going to have his hands full on Twitter.
I like liking things.
Yeah.
And it sounds like sometimes when we review these shows that we enjoy ripping parts to shreds that we don't like, but I don't think that's even a quarter of what we do.
We can always do better. I'm going to keep trying if you guys keep trying.
I don't feel like we're part of the, like, shitty snark economy of the internet.
I hope not. I'm trying to make fun as in make it fun.
Right.
And less making fun of the actual stuff. But there's stuff that's worth it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all complicated, Ben. Complicated feelings.
I respect that this is coming from a place of curiosity, you know?
Yeah, I just want to go to the Paradise Trader Joe's and and see where Grandpa Joe's buying his produce.
Yeah. Grandpa, like, Joe, meet Trader Joe. We get Sisko doing a FaceTime with a Bolian admiral.
Is this a secure line?
To ask about this whole, where was Red Squad during the power outage question. And and all he's got to go on is a transporter record. And the commandant is like, oh my God, I am so glad that you're the one to find this and that you told me. Like, please wipe that record. Like, nobody is supposed to know about that. This is all very embarrassing, but I really appreciate you bringing this to me.
This is the dumbest cover-up ever. If these records weren't deleted before Odo and Sisko were able to find them, right?
Well, if you live in Paradise, you could be forgiven for not, you know, for being a little bit guileless.
Yeah, that's fair, right? These people are inexperienced at this kind of craft.
We talked about how it seemed unfair that Riker was such a good haggler in that episode of TNG where he gets on FaceTime with Quark and, like, they haggle over the price of something.
Uh-huh.
Given that Riker grew up in a cashless society and would never have had to pay anything for anything, much less negotiate a fair price for it.
Yeah.
This kind of seems like it's that same issue. If you don't really need that tight of security because you live in a nearly perfect society, why would you ever be that good at security?
Right. It kind of explains a lot of the problems that Worf has, I guess.
Yeah. All of the unlocked doors on the entrepreneur suddenly start to add up. I really loved where Odo was standing in this scene because he's kind of like investigation training wheels for Sisko. He's standing outside of the camera angle that the FaceTime would be getting, but he's still there, like listening in on what the ambassador's saying and providing Sisko with some tips.
Do you think the reason he didn't turn himself into a paperweight was because paperweights don't have ears?
Oh.
With which to hear the conversation?
I don't know. It does seem like he's aware of stuff going on when he's an inanimate object, because he always knows when to go gold right at the most dramatic moment.
I wonder if it was an issue of budget. Like, you can only turn him gold so many times in a season, and they were just trying to be efficient with it.
Yeah.
Well, I like that part too, Ben, just the leaning up against the TV viewer.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it might be an actual HD TV, like an early example of an HD TV that they used in this set, but then they drew an outline of a really big TV on the wall around it.
Funny. It's so great.
It's very funny.
This Bolian he's talking to is super paranoid, and the thing that makes this Bolian so overmatched in this moment is that Ben Sisko isn't saying anything. He's allowing the Bolian to tell him what he wants to know. And it's clear that there's a cover-up happening because the Bolian says that Red Squad performed their mission admirably. And so if Red Squad was on a mission and it had to do with this blackout and there's some upset feelings about the records involved, about Red Squad's whereabouts there,
right,
then what are we doing? We're constructing a cover-up here, a conspiracy, if you will. And Sisko, by just being a good listener, is getting a ton of information.
So he's also listening to Cadet Nog at his dad's restaurant. It's interesting that that Sisko and Nog kind of have this in common, that the previous generation and their families are entertainers, and they're both Starfleets.
Yeah.
But boy, he really puts the screws to Nog in this scene. It's really fun because Nog is like talking about, oh man, like those guys in Red Squad are so cool. They're not afraid of anything. And Sisko's like, why don't you tell me like the names of some of those guys? And Nog's like, ooh, I don't know if I should. Sisko's like, last I checked, you didn't have a single pip on your little light gray cadet uniform. I got 4 full pips, dude. You're going to tell me some names.
Isn't it interesting that the two most explosive treatments of a leader to a subordinate that I can remember on this show is Picard blowing up at Wesley in the first duty?
Either you come forward and tell Admiral Brand what really took place, or I will.
Captain.
Dismissed!
Yeah.
And Ben Sisko blowing up at Nog.
I want a name, and I want it now, and that is an order. Understood, Mr. Nog?
Both of them were captains. Both of the subordinates were cadets. And I'm really struggling to think of another time when this happened between a captain and someone working for them. Can you think of an example of that?
I don't like you.
I mean, I guess if you get this a couple of times as a cadet, you probably don't do it that much once you're out doing your actual career.
Yeah. But interesting that the show is reluctant to show us a conflict that rises to that level among adults, for example, because it's very like adult versus teenager.
Definitely. I don't envy Nog having to go through it in public.
It's scary to watch Avery Brooks do this to him.
It sure is. It's effective, though. I mean, the next scene is Sisko having a meeting with Cadet Shepard, who is a third-year Academy student.
Starfleet service number C95304699427.
He may also be a third Busey.
He really does have Jake Busey teeth.
Yeah, if the Buseys aren't picking up the phone, I think you got to call this actor.
Boy, it's kind
of... And they shoot him teeth forward too, right? It's like their center screen.
It's kind of like if you had Jake Busey teeth, you would look like this.
I don't necessarily agree. I feel like this guy has a much bigger jaw than me.
Well, yeah, because of all the Jake Busey teeth.
Yeah, you got to fit him in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to push some furniture aside for those fucking things.
A little more to the left.
And like this is another like great use of chain of command.
Yeah.
By Sisko, he just casually asking questions like, this cadet doesn't know the contours of the of like what is and is not secret and who he should and should not talk to about this. And he's talking, you know, it's been established that he admires Ben Sisko, and also Ben Sisko is the head of Starfleet security for Earth. So it is excusable that this cadet would be willing to blab about this, but turns out
he's proud too, right?
The mission went perfectly. If anything, it was easier than the simulations.
The difference between Ben Sisko and this cadet is that Sisko is very taciturn,
mm-hmm.
and the cadet is like,
yeah, he's like we
wanting
didn't screw
him to be
up.
Proud of him, like a son wanting a father to be proud. He's like, you wouldn't believe how great the plan went. It was awesome.
Yeah, we took some flying classes. Didn't even bother learning how to land. Then we boarded some jets. James Woods nearly caught us, but did not.
Later on, Sisko and Odo are at the restaurant. The same restaurant that Ben Sisko never invites Odo to have a meal with him at. Like, they're there after closing, and like Ben helps himself to a glass of milk. The scene kind of made me sad. Like, is Odo in hiding? I kind of feel like he is, isn't he? He doesn't want to have lunch or dinner at the restaurant around other people, probably.
Yeah, he's not making himself other people's problem.
They're doing a debrief with each other about the status of things, and by the end of it, you get the sense that neither of them know why any of this is happening. Like, what's the point of shutting off the power station, and why would Red Squad be doing it? And, like, where do the changelings they believe to be on Earth fit into all this? Stuff's not adding up.
What have they accomplished? There's been no invasion and power's been restored.
You know, like the implications of it are yucky. I feel like my stomach would be a knot and I might have second thoughts about having a big glass of milk while going through that.
Yeah, the night milk thing. Why?
Like I'm not even lactose intolerant, and I know that I wouldn't want to have a big, great big glass of milk right before I went to bed.
It's mentioned later that non-replicated coffee tastes better than replicated coffee. I wonder if Sisko goes for the milk because he knows that...
Oh, it's like a luxury item.
That Joe Sisko went to Trader Joe's and got it fresh.
Yeah. Got the non-homogenized kind that you have to shake up. The fat cap incorporates into the rest of the milk. Mmm.
Gross. I don't like drinking milk.
Oh man!
At any time.
Only way to go if you get some chocolate chip cookies. Nice big frosty glass of milk and some chocolate chip cookies. Nothing better, Adam.
I think if your cookie game is strong, a beverage accompaniment is unnecessary.
I agree. I don't think you should need the milk, but I think it's nice, and I think you should reprogram yourself about that a little bit.
I like a little scoop of ice cream on a hot cookie. Like, that's good.
That's great.
I can't get with the milk, though. I can't do it. Mostly because I never have milk in the house.
Yeah. Sisko's got a big dilemma here because all of this is pointing at something really bad. And all of the people involved are people that he has a long history with and respects.
Yeah.
And, like his line...
These aren't evil people, Odo.
As he's describing them... and grappling with the implications that they might be doing something like extremely, extremely bad felt like a really smart moment in the script, you know, having like gotten this responsibility that he's gotten to do the right thing and be a custodian of the democracy that Paradise Earth enjoys and overcoming the kind of like social cost of having to like name the people he is working with who are actually committing treason.
It's shocking how many times this episode, both this one and in part one, it's shocking the prescience that this script has, not only for circumstances in the world that would happen 5-ish years later,
yeah.
but then 20 years after that, like like the repetition of what this episode is cautioning you against is maybe the saddest part of it. It's not just one instance of not getting it. It's multiple instances over and over again. And I think it makes the script kind of a miracle in that way.
It's such a different tone than the part one episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we talked a lot about how many goofy comedic breaks there were in the last episode and how strange that felt in a post 9/11 world.
Right.
This episode has none of that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to add them all back in.
That's what we do. We take a serious subject matter and make it seriouser. That's the greatest Jen promise.
Yeah. Come to Fort Alma Rain. Come to Fort Alma Rain. What are you doing? Come on, what are you doing now? Exactly. Back at the office of the president, President Hamburger Helper Hands is is like receiving a recap. Like he's got the briefing right now. And he is incredulous about this.
The idea that Starfleet would plot to overthrow the Federation government is the single most astonishing accusation I have ever heard.
And he wants proof. Like the story is so fantastical, he just cannot wrap his mind around it.
Or his loafy hands.
Yeah.
They're saying, you know, we don't have physical proof right here, right now, that Admiral Layton is doing a military coup, but why don't you order him to take his troops off the streets and stand down and see what happens? And I thought that was a terrible suggestion, because if Layton gets that order and defies it, the coup is over, you know?
Yeah, this is such an interesting part in the episode and an interesting part of the president's character, a character that I thought was shitty in the first half. I thought this was a bad character doing dumb things in the first half, but he articulates the problem here really elegantly when he's like,
right now the public overwhelmingly supports the increased security. If I try to remove those troops over Layton's objection, I'll have a planet-wide riot on my hands.
The president was entirely characterized in the last episode via Layton. Everything we got about the president was filtered through Layton's opinion of him. So it is really cool in this episode that they're kind of letting us see him outside of a Layton meeting and being frank about the different forces he's grappling with.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's cool.
I think that happens a lot in television, though. You know, you have very little respect for Rom unless he's apart from Quark, for example. Like, the relationships a character has with other characters colors how you feel about them. And getting the president away from Layton here is an example of that.
Yeah. So we have, a very long scene at Sisko's restaurant after hours where Admiral Layton shows up and shares some coffee with Captain Ben, and this just felt like vintage TNG moral debate. I really liked it.
Somehow, replicated coffee never tastes this good.
Ben Sisko's like,
you know what's on my mind right now? It ain't the coffee.
Yeah, he's wearing that weird bathrobe.
Yeah. You want to know what's going to happen when Joe comes back to the restaurant? I'm going to get a divorce. And we're not even married because he's my dad. And I don't want to get a divorce, Admiral Layton.
Yeah. It seems weird that I wrote this scene so that I could say a bunch of ethnic slurs. Weird that I cast myself in this part of a racist that I wrote for myself. Right? Weird.
This is the centerpiece scene of the episode and of the two-parters, I think, because you get Layton's side arguing full-throatedly for his position, and you get Sisko's side arguing against, and it's lawyer versus lawyer.
And they are citing precedent, too. They have history with each other. There was an incident on a ship that Layton was the captain of, that Sisko was the XO. And they had some disagreement about attacking some Zenkethi, and Ben Sisko was overruled, and Layton wound up having been right in the long run. And this is the debate is basically Layton is saying I'm doing this coup, and I'm your superior officer, and I'm basically ordering you to assist me in it.
I'm still your commanding officer. And now more than ever, I need you to respect my authority.
Like most bad guys, there is a massive flaw in his way of thinking, which is for a guy who's totally about chain of command, Ben Sisko doesn't flip over the table and go, if you're so big on chain of command, why aren't you obeying your commander-in-chief?
Right.
Big chain of command guy. Like, give me a break. You're using it against me, but you're a hypocrite.
He doesn't actually have big chain of command. He just has big chain of command energy.
Mm.
You're also like, if you're a soldier and you are ordered to do something illegal, you're actually honor-bound to ignore that order. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting scene because Layton is like dead certain that this is what must be done to ensure Earth's safety.
Yeah.
He is not an evil person, like Ben Sisko said. He's not thinking of this as being a bad thing that he's like doing to amass power around himself. He's scared of the Dominion and wants everybody to be as scared of the Dominion as he is and see them for the existential threat that he sees them as. And like he has rationalized everything he's done via making the Earth a safer place.
I know there's more going on with him, like, and he's saying that it's not a power grab, but I don't believe him.
Right.
Do you?
I mean, that is the puzzle, right? Like, that's the puzzle of all power grabs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we are experiencing that politically in this country right now, where it's like there's like a very unprecedented power grab by people who claim to have a certain set of moral convictions, and like it seems preposterous that they wouldn't be aware that what they're doing amounts to a coup or whatever, but it's hard to know, you know?
I mean, maybe it's good that we're left guessing about Layton's true intentions. I think in many cases that does a character justice and a story justice.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
A lot of ways to see him, I think.
If you want Chief O'Brien pathos, Adam, this episode has none to offer you because we get some Chief O'Brien, but it is like the least pathos O'Brien has ever had because it's not really O'Brien, is it?
You're not O'Brien.
Ah, luckily, no.
This is a really fun scene. This is like that scene in JFK when Donald Sutherland sits down with Kevin Costner and they talk about conspiracies. Like, they're all by themselves. Ben Sisko can't do anything while this changeling is, like, gloating.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And giving him, like, a bunch of information. Anybody's guess whether this is true or not, but he's saying, it's a changeling in the form of O'Brien saying, yeah, there's only four of us here on Earth, and we've really got you guys flipping your shit.
It's the confidence of a person and a people who know that they can't be hurt in this moment.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't give a shit. There's only four here. What are you going to do about it? It could be four or 4,000 changelings on Earth. Doesn't matter.
You get the sense that they've done this so many times that it's just...
Yeah, like it's a playbook.
Everything that the humans are going to do is predictable for them.
All of this has happened before and all of this will happen again.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
There's some darkness about that, for sure.
You know, real solid Sisko grimace to commercial at the end of this.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A buck in a pail.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Yeah, the one place where you want to be brooding is your dad's restaurant. Like, if you don't want to talk about your problems, you probably shouldn't be hanging around with your dad.
But he does get a nice piece of advice from Pops. Joe Sisko compares what his son is going through to a time when, as a teenager, Ben Sisko had a crush on a girl and like didn't do anything about it for a long time. I really identified with this, like the like not having the nerve to express your feelings to a girl in high school. That was all of high school for me.
The whole comparison of an extinction level event to a high school relationship with a girl is hilarious, though, Joe. I know you're trying to help, but...
Yeah. Psycho-emotionally true.
Yeah. Yeah, he reaches through the brood, though, and connects with him in a way that's constructive.
Yeah, and so it spurs Ben to action. What he does is he and Odo break into Layton's office and download a bunch of computer records that will amount to proof of the plot that is in place. Layton has been reassigning officers all throughout Starfleet in order to like put officers loyal to him in key positions of power for when this coup goes down.
Yeah, it's like it's a movement of hundreds of people. And it's creepily arranged around a special date because the president's going to be making a big speech and a bunch of these people are going to be moved into areas proximate to that speech.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. And they get caught.
Captain, I'm surprised to find you here.
They get caught by, I guess she's still Commander Benteen at this point.
I think by this moment she was promoted to captain.
Isn't this the scene where he's like, oh, congratulations, by the way.
Right. God, Layton's just giving promotions away like Make, Oprah gives away cars.
He's got just pockets full of pips and he's making it rain.
Every time he walks around, you can just hear them rattling like change.
Hey, have a pip. Enjoy it. Say hello to your mother. Yeah, and then Sisko like tries to show up at the president's office to drop this truth bomb on the president, but Layton and a bunch of gold shirts and Benteen are already there, and Benteen does a blood test on Sisko, and it goes gold.
He's a shapeshifter.
He doesn't say anything. He doesn't resist at all.
Yeah.
They throw him in the brig.
It kind of reminds me of that time that Bashir was a secret changeling.
Right.
And they had to take him off to the brig, and like, there's nothing you say after somebody announces that you're under arrest that is going to like change their mind about whether you're under arrest. Like at that point, you just have to go through the process.
That's a great call. He's just waiting for his lawyer.
Yeah. And his lawyer is apparently Odo.
Odo's been a lawyer before. He was a lawyer for O'Brien back when he was put in the clink on Cardassia.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So he's got reps.
Layton comes down to see Sisko in jail before Odo shows up. And I felt like at this point he was wavering a little bit, which I thought was a surprising choice.
Yeah.
Like that Layton would be a little bit vulnerable to arguments that he's actually like doing something really ill.
The personal stuff seems to reach him. The strategy stuff doesn't.
Right.
But he is weakened by his relationship to Ben Sisko for sure.
Yeah.
Weakened enough to let Ben Sisko wear a comm badge into his holding cell. Do you think that the cell negates the ability to communicate? Or was that a mistake, you think?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they give you like a fake one just because like most Starfleet officers just feel naked without it.
Yeah, you don't want to walk around looking that way.
If you want a little peek into the mechanics of this world, Adam, one peek we get is the blood cart lady who comes down to the security area.
Blood draws! Cigarettes!
Yeah, she's wearing a little mini skirt and a pillbox
hat.
She's
got to make those tips, Ben.
Yeah.
I love the little shop talk she has with her coworker.
Yeah, they call her a vampire.
I want more shop talk on this show.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
But one of the objects on the cart was actually secretly Odo, so this security measure is terrible.
Yeah.
And Odo knocks everybody out. And is able to spring Ben Sisko from the clink. And
there was blood and urine samples on that cart, Ben, and so Odo didn't have to work very hard to be one of those.
I look just like that one guy who wasn't super well hydrated.
It takes very little effort for me to turn into a gallon of urine.
I have to be careful when I go to planets where most of the population are piss freaks because people want to drink me.
Pretty fun fight scene here, including a neck pinch.
Yeah.
It's great.
Odo must have been cross-training with some Volks.
Yeah, he gets right in there on the beverage cart lady.
Yeah.
Takes her down non-lethally. That's what you want to do, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. Those people are just pawns. They know not what they do.
Yeah.
So they split up, and Ben goes to arrest Layton in his office, but it's kind of like a house arrest thing where Sisko is like keeping him at phaser point for the entire rest of the episode, basically.
Yeah, that arm's going to get tired.
Dustbuster is heavy.
Yeah.
It's got a big lithium battery in it.
You ever enter one of those contests at a bar where it's like hold the stein of beer out in front of you and whoever can hold it out there the longest gets a free round or whatever?
Oh, man. I've never been to a bar that had a contest of any kind.
This is a long time ago for me.
Not invited to those types of places.
Anyone who's ever seen my arms would be able to predict that I was not the winner of this contest. But I wasn't the first one out, which I was very proud of.
Yeah.
There was someone without any arms at all that actually went out first.
Yeah. They should have their own separate contest, though.
Right. So concurrently to this, the Defiant is on its way.
The cavalry is coming.
And word on the street is that all the wormhole winking that they thought was being caused by penetrations by the Jem'Hadar was actually a device on that communications relay that they installed in the G-Quad many episodes ago.
Yeah.
So there's been some shoes thrown at this thing.
Hence the word sabotage.
And they arrested the guy who did it.
Yeah, working for Layton.
Yeah, and he's in the brig on DS9, unclear whether or not he's wearing a comm badge.
I think they're bringing him on the Defiant, right?
Oh, yeah? He's hitching a ride?
I think they're like bringing him to Earth to stand trial for what he's done or something.
Is he the titular dope in the dope on the table scene that we're promised?
Captain Benteen, now in command of the Lakota, has been sent out to stop the Defiant, and she and her crew have been told that everybody on the Defiant is in fact a shape-shifting founder, and she should stop at nothing to prevent them from getting to Earth. So we get a fun Federation-on-Federation space battle when Worf decides, yeah, let's fight these guys. let's see what this puppy can do.
At the end of Wrath of Khan, did we resolve the whole garage door opener code that exists between Federation starships to the degree that there's a reason why such codes weren't used in this fight scene?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either. It's much more fun that they're both fully defending and attacking each other.
Yeah, I really liked this fight scene. It seemed like a lot faster paced than your typical starship to starship fight scene, which I guess is because the little D is like so much more maneuverable.
I was kind of missing interior of the Excelsior class getting exploded, but that's a big build. Like, you understand line producer-wise why that was not possible.
Right. Well, I mean, you understand, but also, like, it's something that they, like, on Discovery, like, they'll just build the bridge of an entire ship for a single episode, and, like, that's... It's really fun to live in an era where the constraints of that seem to be less serious.
Man, I wonder how much professional jealousy there is among production people. Like,
wow,
just looking at the bucket loads of money thrown at Disco that you just can't get.
Right, and we know what an Excelsior class bridge looks like. It's been built for the films, so it wouldn't be the full price of conceiving, designing, and building.
People have strange relationships to the value of things on studio lots, though. Like, they famously destroyed and threw the Enterprise D bridge, like, outside by a dumpster.
Yeah.
People don't consider that shit.
Yeah. It's a weird deal.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Both ships basically swing haymakers at each other, and shit's not good. Like, they're kind of fighting to a draw.
They fight to a serious enough draw that they're basically like, all right, one of us, like, the next person to shoot is going to kill the other ship.
Right.
And at that point, there are already people dead on both sides. Like, there are a couple of casualties on the little D. There's like 20 or something on the Lakota. Worf is like, nice. And this is when Captain Benteen decides to stand down and allow the little D to proceed to Earth.
This is a real moment of truth for Layton. Like, Layton has an opportunity to tell Benteen to stand down and instead orders her to keep going. And it's Benteen, really, that makes the decision for herself in this moment and defies him. And this is an angle that Ben Sisko uses on Layton in telling him that it's over.
Benteen's already abandoned you.
and she was closer to you than anyone.
If Leighton doesn't have Benteen's allegiance, then he really has no chance of this plan being successful.
This moment was really interesting to me. We talked on Friendly Fire about this movie Valkyrie, where Tom Cruise is like a high-ranking German officer who is involved in a plot to assassinate Hitler and take over the German government during World War II. And there's like a great sequence in that movie where they're like running the coup from a set of offices, and it kind of slowly starts to dawn on them that it's not going their way, and that divisions of troops that they were counting on being on their side or not and stuff. And and you kind of see Leighton go through this, like, well, I still got all of these like loyal officers in all these places, like, well, we're still gonna, like, you know, this didn't go perfectly, but I still have enough support. And Sisko is like, you're gonna fight fucking Earth and Starfleet to get your way now?
Don't you see, Admiral? You're fighting the wrong war.
One of the seven steps of a failed coup is bargaining.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing here.
It really is. And Lawyer Sisko eventually argues the case successfully enough that that Leighton dumps out his final six pips, takes him off his collar, and sets him on the table.
Pips on the table, like his gun and his badge.
Yeah. Yeah, he walks out of the room, and Sisko sets the comm badge and the dustbuster down beside them and, like, looks at the pips very gravely.
Yeah.
What'd you think about that moment? Because I felt like, you know, Sisko's kind of walked back from his life goal just being, like, become an admiral very quickly. And I felt like the weight of him, like, picking up those admiral pips was pretty heavy.
I got the feeling that he kept them too, like as some kind of
talisman of abuse of power.
Yeah, like something that would serve as a reminder for him down the road.
Yeah.
The button on the episode is the drawdown of the security state on Earth. And all of Joe Sisko's customers are beaming away. And he's really in a lot of trouble at this point.
Yeah. He's like yelling, leave a nice Yelp review.
And Ben kind of gets a turn to camera like Tasha Yar got in the drugs episode, you know, talking about the dangers of doing the bad guys work for them.
Yeah.
This is a punctuation to the point of this episode and the episode before. Like, in case you didn't get it, this is what it's actually about.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to disparage the scene. I think it is a necessity of it to kind of wrap things up.
It's not badly done at all.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it made me sad just thinking about what this episode is trying to say in the context of the world today. But maybe we can talk more about that during the did you like this episode part of the show, Ben?
Yeah, we can talk about that then. Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yeah, I did. I feel like the story was well told and efficiently told here.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a lot, and I like what it represents as far as a warning. Like, this is an episode that warns Star Trek, right? Like, it warns the idea of Star Trek.
Yeah.
In a way that is very interesting, because I like when the show comments on itself in addition to commenting on the viewer's world as they experience it. So in that way, I thought it was effective. The paranoia really worked for me, especially.
Yeah.
I thought for sure the button on the episode would be Joe being a shapeshifter. Like, once everyone left, he was gold the whole time. But I'm fine with that. That would have been too cute, I think. What about you, Ben?
Would have been, like, really devastating to have him have been.
Yeah. Even Joe is like, why aren't you being paranoid that I'm suddenly all for blood draws, whereas before I wasn't? Like,
yeah.
Joe kind of goads his son into recognizing his changing relationship to what's happening on Earth, but he doesn't take the bait.
Yeah. I really liked the episode. I thought it was so much better than Homefront.
Weird, right?
There are some things that are very effectively set up in Homefront. Like, the president, I feel like, is really well established in Homefront and then kind of complicated in a fun and surprising way in this episode. But the tone of this one was more even and felt a little bit more appropriate to the subject matter. And it just felt really smart and well argued as like, yeah. You know, it's definitely making a case for a certain way of thinking. And I feel like it makes that case very effectively. Like, I don't think you don't need Homefront, but I kind of wish that one had gotten a little bit more script love, I guess.
It's interesting that they're both scripts are written by the same people, and I wouldn't have expected such a change in that way.
Yeah.
Part one to part two for that reason.
Very strange. What I do expect is that we probably have a couple of priority one messages in our inbox. You want to check on those?
Indeed we do.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature, and it's from our pal Sarah Archer.
What?
Yeah. She has a book coming out. It's called Mid-Century Kitchen.
Oh, man.
And it's available right now from Countryman Press. I follow her on Twitter, and she shared some things there, like some screen grabs of the book and some of the pictures that are in it, and I'm really excited about it. Here's the copy she asked me to read. The Mid-Century Kitchen is a new book by Sarah Archer that will transport you back to the world of the futuristic kitchens of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Technology and taste, from aqua to avocado, this beautifully illustrated pop history of kitchen design, appliances, and culinary culture is a must-do for foodies, fans of mid-century design, and retro futurists alike.
Man, I am all of those things.
I know. So friends of DeSoto and fans of vintage kitchen design are sure to enjoy the lavishly illustrated Mid-Century Kitchen, now available from Countryman Press and wherever you like to get your books.
Hell yeah.
Sarah Archer, book coming out. That's killer.
Get that book, Mid-Century Kitchen. Adam, we have a second priority one message here. It's of a personal nature. It's from Alex from Sector 47, and then it says in parentheses, Pomona College loves Star Trek. And it's for Ben and Adam. It goes like this. Hi guys, we met in Phoenix. I was awkward. Here's what I meant to say.
You'll have to be more specific.
So were we, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Here's what I meant to say. I struggle with mental health because of Trump. Your show has meant so much to me while I'm on news blackouts to keep my sanity intact. Thank you for making a thing that is warm, optimistic, and enjoys scarves and loaf. This is the Ro Laren song from Wu-Tang. She is my bae. Thanks, Alex.
The Ro Laren song is not from Wu-Tang. Guess again, Alex.
You're going to make Alex get another P1 to submit a follow-up guess?
I'm not going to make Alex do that. I think this question has been asked and answered a bunch.
Alex, thank you for coming to a live show, and I'm glad that our show can be a comfort to you while taking care of yourself. It is really important to know what your limits are, W/R/T news intake.
Yeah, and, that's for sure.
I've definitely been there a bunch of times in the last couple of years of just needing to like tune it out for a while and not feel like I bear all of the responsibility of it every single day.
We don't have the news on 24 hours a day like everyone's parents.
Yeah, man. Really trying to talk my dad into knocking it off with that lately.
Well, if you have a priority one message of a commercial or personal nature, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and book announcements are $200. They are a great way to help you get the word out on your book or get a message out to your friends, and they support the ongoing production of this program. So thanks very much.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
It feels like a cop-out, but I'm going to give it to El Presidente again. I feel like they get achingly close to him being interesting. And they just don't do it. The idea of an Earth being a paradise in the future has never felt more far-fetched. And so the idea of there being this in the show interested me greatly, but I wanted a leader installed here that made me happy in both ways. Like, I wanted to have perfect future, paradise earth, but I also wanted a president that I liked and thought could handle a problem. And this guy never could at any point. And he was sort of feckless and bad for most of the two-part episode. And while he was able to articulate some issues he was having a little better this time around, I still didn't think he was a good character. And I think for that reason, I'm going to give him a Shimoda. I think they got to vote him out of office, Ben. Get him out of there.
Wow.
Don't replace him with Layton. Like, this should be a democratically voted installation of a new leader. But I think you got to get this guy out of here. He's trash.
Got to impeach the motherfucker already.
What about you?
Mine also maybe feels a little bit like a cop-out, but it's Shapeshift O'Brien.
Yeah.
Felt really drunk Shimoda-like, just kind of carefree and didn't give a fuck.
It felt very fun for Calamini. Like, yeah. You couldn't help but think that this was great for him.
Just coming in very high spirits. I loved it. I mean, you could tell something was wrong with him the second he walked in because he seemed happy. So his ghost's like, "You're not the real O'Brien."
Are you sick? What's happening?
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that gold press latch.
Am I right? Am I right?
Moms can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below the waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Well, Ben, we have started over at the beginning of our Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets game, but what is the episode we're going to be watching next time around?
The next episode is Season 4, Episode 12, Crossfire. Odo's hidden feelings for Kira interfere with his duty to protect the Bajoran First Minister, who also happens to be attracted to her.
Ooh.
So a little bit of a love triangle.
That's French for triangle?
I don't know. Probably okay. Not. I just made it up.
Very plausible to me, Ben.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Got the die in my hand, and I'm about to cast the die. We're currently on square 6. And several squares ahead, we've got a Coco No-No episode. So maybe we'll go there. I have rolled a 3.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Which puts us on square 9 and right on the doorstep of that Coco No-No tiki-themed drunk episode. So
okay.
Close, but no cocktail for us. Regular old episode.
Yeah. All right. Looking forward to it. We got a few thank yous to get through here. We should thank all of the people that make all the great like fan art for the show.
Yeah.
I want to specifically call out our buddy Bill Tilly, who makes trading cards of every episode, and J.J. Lendl, who makes a movie poster of each episode of the show and puts it up the Sunday before our episode drops.
We say this all the time. They can quit at any time.
Yeah.
They are not obligated to do this. I hope this isn't a stress for them because it's an enjoyment for us.
We love it. And we love all the other art that that gets created around the show, too. Use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter to send that stuff to us. I'm on there at Benjamin R, A-H-R, and Adam is on there at Cut for Time.
We hang up the art that we get at live shows or in the mail and stuff. It's really fun to have that stuff around. All the stuff that people make about the show is really great.
It's terrific. We should also give a big, big thanks to the Friends of DeSoto who go to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute to the production of this show on a monthly basis. We literally could not do this without you, and it's the main way we make a living now. So if this show is of value to you, if you would be sad to see it go away, think about what you could part with on a monthly basis to ensure its ongoing production, and sign up and do that.
It's got to be a successful mission, Ben. What are we willing to do to ensure that it works?
Yeah.
A coup? Wow. I would coo for this show.
We should also thank all the people that go to Apple Podcasts and leave nice reviews of the program and the folks that recommend
that big time.
It to friends. And, you know, sign up for our mailing list at gach.biz/mail where we'll have news about live shows later on this year coming up. But if you'd like to see us live sooner rather than later, come to the Friendly Fire live shows that we've announced at friendlyfire.fm/live.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is about Amwa de Triangle.
Jesus Christ.
Like Triang!
A giant chest of clothing.
Did I pronounce both words wrong?
Yes.
Armoire? Amour. Amour! I like it my way better. Armoire de Triangle.
Yeah, yeah.
It's but, just a closet full of love, Ben.
Yeah, love it.
Awful. I'm hitting stop.
Me too.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.